At the end of the day, I think the biggest promise of connected strategies is if you are able to use the information that you get from the customer to climb up what we would call the hierarchy of needs of a customer, right? And eventually actually become sort of a trusted partner with your customer.
That was Professor Nikolai Zygielko, who, together with his co-author, described the impacts of connected companies. Nikolai is the David M. Knott Professor of Management at the Wharton School, University of Pennsylvania. He's also a co-director of the Mack Institute for Innovation Management. In this episode, we discuss the potential for companies to ethically connect with their customers, the different roles that consumers play in these new relationships, and also why companies that collect and resell customer data will increasingly have to offer a greater quid pro quo in the eyes of consumers. But first of all, I'd like to welcome you to Digital Mindfulness, where each week we take deep dives into the latest developments in ethical tech and digital well-being. We bring you the very best companies and thought leaders from around the world to help bring light on this growing sector. We really hope you enjoy this episode with Nikolai Zygielko. Nikolai, welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to have you on, and I'm really excited to learn more about this fascinating book and area that you're working in. So welcome to Digital Mindfulness.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
So, Nikolai, I wonder if you would just, for the people that might not be aware of your work, just introduce yourself, and in particular, if you can talk a little bit more about how you came to be working in this intersection of technology and business.
Yeah, no, of course. So, I've been a faculty member here at the Wharton School in Philadelphia for the last 21 years, teaching strategy. And, of course, there's always the question from our students, our MBA students, our executive audiences, so, right, what is new? And clearly, you look outside the window, or you open up the newspapers, and lots of things seem to be new, right? A lot of new technologies are coming out, and quite a number of managers are struggling with, you know, how do I make sense of all of these new technologies? I hear about AI, I hear about the sharing economy, I hear about 3D printing, investment robo-advisors, et cetera, right? And so, together with my colleague and good friend Christian Terwisch, we both actually are also the co-directors of the Mack Institute for Innovation Management here at Wharton. And so we have, again, contact to a lot of companies where very similar issues were arising. And so one common observation that we had across a whole set of industries was that firms were fundamentally reshaping the way they were interacting with their customers. Now, it's sort of rather than waiting for a customer to come to us with a particular need, we have now this continuous relationship with customers that allows us also quite often to anticipate needs and to find even better solutions and to help the customer find the right solutions for them. And so we see this in, you know, starting with healthcare, but obviously we see this in entertainment, in retail, and in financial services. And so that's kind of a few years ago, we kind of started down this path of trying to really understand what are the kinds of different strategies that firms are using, and, you know, how can we develop some tools that would help our managers kind of to create their own, what we eventually called, you know, creating their own connected strategies.
You mentioned earlier that you're frequently asked what's coming next by faculty members and by commentators and by students themselves. But I'm wondering, Nikolai, in the 21 years that you have been at Wharton, what actually has stayed the same?
Well, there are some, most of the things have stayed the same, I would argue, right? So there are some very fundamental elements of, you know, you only can create a competitive advantage relative to other firms if you're able to create a bigger gap between, on the one hand, the value that customers see in your product, and we call this in our book, the willingness to pay that customers have for your product or service. Right. And on the other hand, the fulfillment cost that it takes you to create this willingness to pay in the eye of the customer. Right. So this gap between willingness to pay and cost, and you really have to make that gap bigger than that of your competitors. Right. And this is sort of a fundamental truth of strategy. And that applies no matter whether we're calling, you know, talking about the newest strategy that we've seen or the oldest strategy that we know about.
That's great. So I want to move on now to talk about your new book, Connected Strategy, building continuous customer relationships for competitive advantage. And in addition to telling us what this book actually is about, I wonder if you can talk a little bit more about what connected strategy and also what a connected company actually is. Because I'm sure as people go every day throughout their digitized lives and connecting to these different tools and services, the idea that we are constantly connected to companies might be something that's a little bit academic and might go over people's heads. So I wonder if you can just explain that a little bit more for the audience.
Yeah, no, so a connected strategy really has two different parts. So one is what we would call this connected customer relationship. It's really the kind of deep relationship that firms are trying to create with their customers. And that's quite often kind of linked to this concept of willingness to pay, or kind of the value that the customer derives from having that relationship with that firm. And then on the other hand, there is what we would call a connected delivery model, right? So if now I, as a firm, actually have to create this connected customer relationship at a reasonable cost, right? And again, sort of what we sometimes call the magic of the connected strategy is that it allows firms kind of to both create a better customer experience while actually incurring lower cost or by increasing efficiency, right? And then so it is that dual thing that actually creates disruption in industries. So if you take Uber as a quick example, right, sort of Uber created a product that customers had, right, more value from, because what was easier to order, it was easier to pay. Quite often the cars are nicer, etc. Right. So my experience from going from A to B was actually better in an Uber or a Lyft than in a cab, while at the same time, these ride hailing companies were able to create that ride at a lower cost than a traditional cab company could. Right. And so now you're creating a better product at a lower cost. That creates disruption, right? And so, again, we see this in lots of other instances, but that's like maybe one example.
I think, as you mentioned previously, Uber's ability to utilize lots of different technologies to create this ride-hailing experience is really fascinating and an excellent example of what it means to be a connected company and to have these connected strategies. But I'm also really interested in companies that didn't start that way, that didn't start as technological natives, as it were, but rather transitioned into having these connected strategies, a little bit like Disney, as you mentioned in the book. And do you have any other examples of companies that have gone that way, that have had to transform the way that they do business?
Well, and again, I think just one more word on the ride-hailing companies. I mean, they are not digital natives either in some sense, right? It's moving people around, right? It's a fairly physical thing. It's not just a digital product, right? It's actually a kind of a physical service that we're providing. But right, so in that instance, the key innovation was connecting previously unconnected parties, right? And so this is kind of really an innovation in the connected delivery model, much more than actually in the connected customer relationship. But yeah, so another example. One example we love is Disney and the Magic Band. All right, so I don't know whether you've been to Disney World lately with us, but all right, it used to be you get a ticket and that was sort of kind of the interaction you had with Disney, right? And you would enter the park and at some point you would leave the park, but Disney basically wouldn't know what you were doing. And nowadays with the Magic Band, on the one hand, it makes your life as a customer easier because you don't have to carry around a room key anymore because it opens up your hotel room. You don't have to run around with your FastPass ticket because it, you know, allows you to use the FastPass line. You don't have to have a credit card in your pocket because you can, you know, buy anything with it. So kind of from the transactional point of view, it makes your life as a customer easier. But at the same time now, it allows Disney to know where everyone is in the park. So now I can redirect traffic saying, oh, look, over here, there's actually a shorter line, rather a longer line. Again, that may make my life better as a customer. But also it allows Disney to run the parks more efficiently because, for instance, right, you know, the Disney team told us the problem that they used to have was they open up the gates in the morning of the park and it would take like an hour or so for people to get to that last attraction at the back of the park, right? And so basically I have idle capacity sitting there, right? And so now by being able to pre-program itineraries for my visitors, I can really, they call it jumpstart operations in the mornings, right? I can have good capacity utilization across all of my attractions right from the beginning, and that allowed them to have even more people in the park without degrading the experience that people had. So here's again sort of an example where a particular connectivity, right, allowed us to both create a better customer experience while at the same time increasing our efficiency. Right? And so that's kind of, again, that dual advantage.
In the book, Nikolai, one of the things that came across to me quite strongly was the difference between companies using these connected strategies that you're talking about, but also trying to transform just by gaining greater efficiencies. And I wonder if you can talk about the difference between the two and why being a connected company is much more important.
Absolutely, yeah. And so I think the interesting thing is when I talk to managers and I ask them, so what are some value drivers of your customers? Quite often, managers will very quickly focus on tangible and intangible aspects of their products or services, right? So what's the quality? What's the size? What's the speed? What's the durability? What's the brand image, right? And clearly, those things are very important. But I think it is really important to realize that customers spend sort of an entire journey with you. It is not just the experience that they get from the product or service, right? There is a much longer customer journey that starts with the customer becoming aware of the need that I need something, right? A particular product or service. I may not know that I need to save for my retirement, right? So at some point I become aware of my need. Oh, I should be saving for retirement. But now the question, and so A, kind of the question is, was this the optimal time that I became aware of it or not, right? And so maybe you can help me. So quite often customers become aware of their needs not at the most efficient time. You know, when I'm lying on the floor with a heart attack, that's not the most optimal time, right, to become aware of that need. But that's basically how most of healthcare is working, right? We are waiting for something really catastrophic to happen, and then you come to the healthcare system, right? So the awareness of need part of the customer journey, there's things we can do there. Then I became aware of my need, but now I have no idea what to do about it, right? So yes, I need to save for retirement, but what does that mean? Right? You know, so there's so many different investment options. So there's the question of helping me to understand what are actually all of my options and then deciding what the best option is. Okay, so if now I have maybe some decision, okay, I want to invest in this particular mutual fund or that. Now the question is, how do I actually go about ordering this? Right? Do I need a broker or do I not? Right? And so there's a whole other process of now, right, ordering, paying it, getting it, and then eventually, right, I will actually experience the product, right? And then there's some after-sales service support, right? So there's a whole customer journey. And so what we've done is kind of described in the book different types of what we would call connected customer experiences. And you can think about these different customer experiences as acting on different parts of this customer journey that we just sketched out. So one type of experience we would call respond to desire. So here a customer knows exactly what he or she wants, right? I need a car to take me from here to the airport right now, or I need a particular cartridge for my particular printer that I have, or I need some accommodation in Chicago next weekend, right? And so now, kind of the customer is ready to press that order button because they know exactly what they want and they want to have the rest of that journey to be as smooth as possible, right? So then there are some customers who say, well, I kind of sort of know what I want. You know, I'm kind of in the mood for a comedy tonight. Netflix, how about this? And Netflix says, that's wonderful. Here are 10,000 comedies we have, right? That would not be very helpful, right? So what we call a curated offering connected customer experience says, look, now I start to learn more about you, Nikolai, and I know what kind of movies you like, what kind of comedies you like, and I can tell you, oh, and by the way, here's a new release that you may not have been aware of, right? And so they can curate their offering and show me, let's say, here's an option of 5, right? So that, again, adds value to me. It's not just what great movie you have, but am I actually able to find the great movie that I want, right? Then comes this one step before when I'm not even aware of my need. So we would call that coach behavior, right? So quite often people want to achieve certain goals, right? Of course, I want to take my medication, but I'm forgetful, right? Or I want to lose some weight, but oh, sticking to the diet is hard. And I want to finish my first marathon, but oh, running every day, right? And so if you can help me, in some sense, as a coach, right? Or as a little parent, or, you know, tapping me on the shoulder once in a while to help me achieve those goals, right? That, again, increases my willingness to pay, that fulfills some deeper needs that I have. And then the fourth type of connected customer experiences we call automatic execution. So that's sort of the example of where, you know, your printer just reorders the toner itself, right? The printer knows when it's running out of toner, so why couldn't just the printer reorder the toner, right? And sort of someone else delivers it and I never run out of it, and I never have to worry about running out of it. I never have to go through this entire customer journey. You know actually what my needs are before even I realize what these needs are, and you can execute it. Right? Now, one important point we're making in the book is that we certainly do not believe that automatic execution is always the best connected customer experience to create. I mean, I think probably some people in Silicon Valley believe that, but we certainly do not. Right? Customers differ very much in their preferences of how much they want to delegate decisions to a firm. Right? So some people would love to be in the driver's seat, but saying, you know, I want to order whatever I want. I know exactly what I want, but just make that as easy for me as possible. Right? Whereas others say, no, you know, give me some help, but I still want to make a decision. To some people say, oh, if you could just do it for me, great. Right? And so again, different customers will have different preferences. And so as companies, we really have to make sure that we have a whole array of these connected customer experiences available. And so we need to figure out for a particular customer, right, what is the right connected experience that we can create for that customer.
We've spoken a lot about these different types of connected strategies that these various companies have. And one thing that we haven't spoken about, and it'd be great if you can elaborate on this, is whether there's room for ethical connected strategies, whether, for example, there's room for decision makers to start thinking about the ethical use of data or the ethical application of machine learning models or of artificial intelligence. What space is there for the ethical deployment of these connected strategies, do you think?
At the end of the day, I think the biggest promise of connected strategies is if you are able to use the information that you get from the customer to climb up what we would call the hierarchy of needs of a customer, right? And eventually actually become sort of a trusted partner with your customer. So let's take healthcare as an example, right? So I might feel some heart palpitations right now. And so really what I would love to do is to talk to a cardiologist and as quickly as possible. But really what I like you to do is to deal with my cardiac problems. Actually, what I really would like you to do is to deal with my health problems, whether it's my heart or my elbow. And really, actually, ultimately, what I like you to do is to keep me healthy. Right? So that's kind of a hierarchy of needs, right? And I think what connected strategies can do for companies is allow them to slowly move up this hierarchy of needs to eventually become this kind of trusted partner. Now, that raises, though, kind of a chicken and egg issue that's very much related to kind of to the term ethical that you just mentioned, right? And that is, unless I have this very deep connection, this deep information flow between me and the customer, it's hard for me as a company to fulfill these more fundamental needs. At the same time, unless I as a company have a credible value proposition to you as a customer that I actually will be able to do that, you as a customer probably do not want to have this deep connection with me in the first place, because there are privacy concerns, there are security concerns, right? And so kind of the data trust, the data security play an absolutely central role, right, in the evolution of creating these connected strategies. And so kind of to us, I mean, obviously, this is a huge field, a field that's changing both sort of on the regulatory side, right? I mean, Europe is quite different from the US, it's quite different from China, but it is also the feelings of people that they have, right, about, you know, how much am I willing to share is changing over time. And so this is a very, very difficult and important topic. And for us, I think the key element is probably transparency, right? Sort of as long as I as a customer sort of understand what you're doing with my data, and as long as I as a customer see the value you are providing to me by using my data, right? That is kind of the quid pro quo that you want to get at. So I like sometimes to use Amazon as an example, because I think Amazon has been fairly good in doing this for a while, right? So Amazon started out by asking you, well, just give me your address and your credit card number, right? And you say, okay, well, let's see, right? And so I gave you this little slice of my data, and in return, Amazon gave me a button, right? And now I can just press that button and boom, I'm done. And it's like, wow, actually, that made my life easier, right? I don't have to fiddle with my credit card. I don't have to re-enter my address all the time. No, I see something, one click, I'm done. My life is easier. I gave you a little bit of data, and I see the value in return, right? So then Amazon says, well, so if now I solve that pain point for you, but the problem is whenever I try to deliver, you're not at home. how about you give me access to your trunk of your car? And I go, that's kind of weird, but okay, well, let me give you again. So a little bit of slice of my data, right? I give you, some permission, and boom, right now I come home and I never have to go to UPS or FedEx anymore. It used to be twice a month. I find all of these, brown tags on my door because I never home, right? And I have to go to some obscure logistics center somewhere on the outside of town to grab my package, right? And so it's, again, I think it is kind of this slow progress of, you as a customer, give me a slice of the data, I make your life better, then you may be willing to give me more of your data. And that's clearly true in the B2C context, but it's maybe even more true in the B2B context, right? When different companies interact with each other, because companies say, well, I'm not quite sure I want to give you all my data, right? You may turn around and use it against me, right? And so you really have to build up that trust, right, over time. And so that's the ethical use of your the data becomes a crucial element, right, I think, of creating a long-term sustainable connected strategy.
So Nikolai, for all of the people listening who might be managers or thinking about deploying these connected strategies in an ethical way, as we've just been speaking about, what are the first things that they would have to be thinking about in order to successfully deploy?
Yeah, I think one of the first steps indeed is to kind of think through this customer journey, right? And put yourself into the shoes of a customer and ask yourself, what are the various steps that this customer is going through? What are the pain points? What are the what are the value drivers along this entire customer journey? And as you were saying, kind of, we can also group kind of different stages of this customer journey into kind of these three elements. The first is sort of what we would call the recognize dimension, right? Either you as a company have to recognize the need of the customer, or you have to help the customer recognize his or her need. Right, then comes the request part, which is, okay, now I know what the need is, but now I need to understand what are the right kinds of, what are the possible solutions out there, and then that, what is the best solution for me, and I have to sort of issue a request for that particular solution. And then the third part is kind of the respond part, right? So now as a firm, get this request or generate that request, but now I actually have to have that particular product or service available, right, on a timely manner to the customer. So that's kind of the first part, it's the recognize, request, respond. And that kind of corresponds a bit to these different connected customer experiences that I was talking about, right? And so now we can maybe link kind of two different elements here. Up to this point, again, it was an experience, not quite a relationship yet, right? And it is, I think, kind of that fourth R that we talk about, the repeat dimension. And we just talked about sort of the ability to move up the hierarchy of needs. That is, I think, a very, very important dimension. And that means that as I'm having now more and more interactions with you as a customer, I learn about you more and more. And that allows me to become better in recognizing, requesting, responding. But also I learn about customers like you, right? So again, if I'm Netflix, I learn more and more about this one particular customer. And so I know what kinds of movies to suggest. But I also kind of learn about customers like you. And so now that may give me some insight. Okay, so what kinds of movies should I actually have available for you to watch, right? And so what kind of content do I need to license? And then at some point I say, wow, maybe I understand my viewers better than any movie studio could. So maybe I can even create my own shows, right? And so it is really through this repeat dimension that I can potentially actually create a sustainable connected advantage. So you earlier asked this, good question of, so what has stayed the same, right? And my answer was, you need to create a bigger gap in willingness to pay on cost. And so coming back to our Uber and Lyft examples, the key question is not, why is Uber better than a cab company, right? That's pretty easy to see, right? And we outlined this very quickly, right? Better service, lower cost. And so the way we express it in the book is saying kind of they really have sort of pushed out the efficiency frontier of their industry. But the problem is they have pushed out that efficiency frontier, but now there is someone else called Lyft at basically exactly the same spot on that new efficiency frontier. And so now it's much harder to argue, why is Uber better than Lyft, or why is Lyft better than Uber, right? But that is actually the key strategy question you need to answer, right? In order to create a competitive advantage, you have to be better than your competitors, not just better than the status quo. And our argument in the book is that it is probably through this repeat dimension, through this learning dimension, that firms really can potentially create a sustainable competitive advantage. Because again, that customer insight piece, that is probably much more difficult to copy than a particular feature on your app or a particular feature in your product.
So going on from my question of what has stayed the same, I'm interested to know now how you see these connected strategies evolving for companies in the near future.
So I think it was Yogi Berra who said, right, predictions are always difficult, particularly if they're about the future, right? And so, we want to be always a bit careful, but I think we're quite comfortable, kind of both Christian and I are quite comfortable kind of predicting that the sense of having a personalized experience with a company will just continue to increase, right? Kind of this notion of, look, you should know things about me. You should be able to custom tailor the experience to me, right? And I think that we are at the early stages of this, but I think this is sort of a very general trend across all different aspects of your life, right? And where you, when you start seeing it in one aspect of your life, you go to a different aspect in life, say, why can't you be like that, right? And so I think, again, using Amazon, right? So if nowadays, sort of the expectation of, right, overnight shipping and free returns, and right, so this has become sort of natural, right? Kind of now someone tells you, I'm going to ship you this in 2 weeks, you say, what, right? Kind of, and so I think likewise, kind of, right, Netflix starts to know more about me, so why should my healthcare provider know more about me? And right, and so I think, so that general trend, I think will continue. Now, it is maybe our naive hope that trust fundamentally lies at that relationship, but that is, I think, something that we would think about at least to have a sustainable future, because right now I think the companies are a bit in the driver's seat, because I as a customer don't have really much ability to monitor in some sense the kind of data that's streaming out of my devices. Right. And so I think often fairly unwittingly sharing a lot of data. My sense, again, is there will probably become a technological solution for that, where I as a customer will become much more in the driver's seat of metering out and monitoring, kind of, right? What data am I sending out? What do I get in return? Now, again, we haven't seen this quite yet, but that's sort of my belief that eventually we'll get there. And firms who just use sort of, okay, you just give me the data and I'll just use it to resell it, right? I don't see that as a very sustainable business model. As long as there's not a quid pro quo, I think, yes, for right now, it is feasible, and we are still a little bit in the wild, wild west of this whole industry. But I think eventually, I think that's where we're going to end up.
Everything you just mentioned now, and actually you talk about this in the last section of the book, particularly around revenue models, this whole idea you were saying about companies capturing attention or capturing data about people and then reselling that data. Of course, this is the dominant business model of the internet, but you say it's not sustainable, and that actually what we're going to go towards is something more akin to a quid pro quo, an opt-in relationship with companies. And so it's almost, it seems that trust then will be the biggest factor, how the extent to which people trust and build connections with the company.
Yeah, and how much they see a value in return, right? So I certainly believe that businesses will still, there will be businesses around whose main business model it is to collect data and to sometimes resell that data. But I as a customer have to see, so what's the value to me, right? What is the value you're providing to me? As long as if I don't get kind of transparency of how we're using it, if I don't get kind of a clear value proposition back, that I think is what's probably not sustainable in the long run.
Fantastic. Well, Nicola, where can people find out more about you and your work? And more importantly, where can they buy the book?
Yeah, so you can go to connected-strategy.com. That's sort of the website we've created for the book. And we have actually lots more content on that website than what is in the book. The book, as you said, has some of these workshop chapters that really kind of guide people through, here's some worksheets you want to fill out. Now they are small because they're in a book. So if you want to have the downloadable versions, you go to the website and you can, you know, download them for free. But we've also filled them out actually for a whole bunch of companies in different industries. So that may give you sort of a nice template to start out with. You know, we have a whole bunch of podcasts with a number of the characters that we feature in the book, etc. So that's probably the best starting point if you want to learn more about connected strategy.
Well, Nikolai, thanks for spending time with us today and sharing much more with us about this whole idea of connected strategies. It's been really fascinating, and it's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.